Thank you, Mark, for reading for us, and thank you to Austin Sherman for adding the bongos to the choir number that we just enjoyed. I just could almost ask them to do that again. That was fun. So thank you so much for that. We were watching at our house something we almost never watch because it doesn't make great TV. We watched hockey last night at our house. The Stanley Cup playoffs are going on right now. Hockey doesn't televise real well, but it's an exciting game to see in person. It's fast moving and something that Elizabeth and I have enjoyed some over the years in places we've lived. Wayne Gretzky was one of the greatest hockey players the game has ever known. And I'm confident of this not because of my own prowess at hockey. Goodness knows I've hardly ever laced a pair of skates up in my life. No, one only needed to watch a lot of ESPN back in the 80s and 90s, which I did, or pick up the sports page occasionally, which I did more than occasionally, to hear his name constantly. He didn't just play well. He dominated his sport in a way that few others have in any game at any level. Or you could just remember how good he was by the fact that his fellow players nicknamed him the Great One. Now, looking at Wayne Gretzky, it wouldn't have revealed why he was so good. He was a very average-looking athlete, and he knew this. He didn't skate particularly faster than others did on the ice around him, and he certainly wasn't large for a hockey player. So when one reporter asked him after his career had ended what his secret might have been, Gretzky said something surprising. "I probably didn't have any real physical advantages over the other players," he said, "but I did seem to do one thing better than the others. So I used this for all I was worth. My anticipation of where the puck was going to be seemed better somehow than everyone else's. So I would just skate as hard as I could to that spot, and it usually gave me that extra couple of seconds that I needed to work with. It gave me an advantage. It was the only thing that I did better than anybody else." His vision and understanding of the game helped him to have an anticipation before the other players could. Ted Williams was the last man to bat 400 in the major leagues. He was a Hall of Famer, but he turned out to be a terrible hitting coach and an even worse manager. Some people have a theory why. It is because for all of his understanding and technique, Williams seemed to see better than other players did. He had a natural edge over other players. Legend has it that Ted Williams could read the label of a record turning on a record player. The ball just looked different coming out of the pitcher's hand to him than it did to the other players. And he couldn't understand why other people couldn't do what he could do, and he never came to understand it. Trying to envision where God wants a church to go can be a tricky thing, because we only see what we see, and we only know what we can know. The Israelites arrived on the precipice of the promised land. Mark read the text for you just a few minutes ago. The land of Canaan. And they sent 12 spies in to see what they could see, to get a look around. And then they sat back and waited for the report. I wonder if there's a lesson in this story for us that might be helpful as we anticipate a report later this spring from our own Lighting God's Path leadership team. This representative group will bring a plan in just a few weeks. And I hope you will be excited about what it will contain. I'm not sure what the final shape will be, but you should be excited, I'm convinced. It will affirm, among other things, that God's calling upon us continues, and that we continue to have significant resources that we can use to live into the next chapter of Franklin Baptist Church's span. And I hope that gives you energy. I think you're going to hear that in a compelling way. You remember this story about Israel's spies. They came back out successful in their mission. All of them made it back, due in great part to the help they received in one city from Rahab, who hid them at her place after word had gotten out among the local leaders that spies were in the land. And she covered for them. They had a close brush with death there, but they made it back out to give their report. And now the report was given in chapter 13, just before what you heard from chapter 14 today. It started off sounding really good. And this was a representative group, you know, one leading citizen from every ancestral tribe, chapter 13 describes. No Levites, though, not a preacher in the bunch. These were real men on this team. Verse 23, and they came to the Wadi Eshkol and cut down from there a branch, one single cluster of grapes. And they carried it on a pole between two of them. They also brought some pomegranates and figs. And at the end of 40 days, they returned from spying out the land. And they came to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the Israelites in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him, "We came to the land which you sent us. It flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit." Now, people were probably pretty excited at this point. I'm guessing some of the crowd hearing the scouting report could probably feel a tingle that started on their heads and went all the way down to their toes. Their pulses probably began to race as they stared at the giant, giant display of fruit that had come from a single cluster, picturing themselves in the paradise of a land that was flowing with milk and honey. It was soon to be theirs. But the report continued, and it brought them down in a hurry. Verse 28, "Yet the people who live in the land are strong," the spies said, "and the towns are fortified, very large. And besides, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the land of the Negev. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites live in the hill country. And the Canaanites, they live over by the sea and along the Jordan." But Caleb quieted the people before Moses, and he said, "Let us go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it." And then the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against this people, for they are stronger than we." So they brought to the Israelites an unfavorable report of the land that they had spied out, saying, "The land that we have gone through as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people that we saw in it are of great size." Some translations say they are giants. "And there we saw the Nephilim, the Anakites come from the Nephilim. And to ourselves we seemed like grasshoppers. And so we seemed to them." Okay. This wasn't good at all. The crowd turned toward Moses and Aaron and started to stone them. And the people who were hoping for one thing were clearly hearing another now. You know, before I came here, I kept something in mind when I was trying to discern the type of church I wanted to talk with. But all along, mystified at some of the specific ones who sometimes didn't want to talk with me. And every minister who becomes open to a new calling goes through this. And a wise older minister said to me once, "Pastor search committees are a mystery. No two act alike. No two quite read a resume in the same way, but they all have a song they're listening for. Now, you won't know from a distance what the song's going to be, so you just got to be yourself and trust. But when they hear their song in a candidate, they know it." Well, I don't know exactly what you'll be hoping for, listening for, when Lighting God's Path brings its report. I'm not sure what the song is that you're going to want to hear. I can remind you of a few things that you should count on from this process, though. It'll be representative of our collective best understandings and hopes. The feedback you have given in three prior congregational luncheons and the more recent meetings that we've had and still are to have one or two of, they're going to be a central component to shaping it. But you've also sent this team out into the land to look things over. And this group have interviewed significant leaders for a statistical understanding of Franklin and Southampton County, especially, and we've presented that at a congregational luncheon about a month ago. They have listened for trends that leaders are seeing. They have gathered news that is both challenging and encouraging. Some of it downright exciting. I also know that when they give their report, not every specific thing that any one of you probably hoped would be in it will probably be in it. Like me, this group of volunteers work for all of you, but for no one of you. So let's get back to our story from Numbers and see how things ended for this group that was sent out from the others to look things over. And then I want to try to impress a few things on you because we've got to pick a story. The Israelites had 10 spies who said it couldn't be done, that they simply couldn't take possession of the promised land, but they had 2 spies, Joshua and Caleb, who said they could with God's help. What hung in the balance was their best understanding of where God was headed next. And since they had already been told that this was where they were to go and live, they had a pretty good sense of what that was. So it all came down to their level of trust. And in the end, they did the predictable thing and sided with the 10 who said they couldn't possibly prevail and go into the land God had promised them. They picked the wrong story. God's punishment was to leave them right where they were for another full generation. You've heard this before. This is why they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years, remember? And I don't want to be manipulative with this. So keep in mind, as I speak, the plan hasn't yet been written fully. There's nothing specific I'm trying to guide you toward today. There's nothing I'm trying to sell you on specific. But when our turn comes, it'll boil down eventually to our sense of trust and faithfulness. It'll boil down to how much we've been listening and how present we've been in the meetings and with the presentations that have been made. And one request for today. Please don't meet me at the back door and say, "What you really told us today," because I'm not here to tell you anything. We're having a family conversation as we look over into the next age together. And no matter what the specifics of our lighting God's path plan turn out to be, here are some other things I already know. And I'm going to talk honestly with you, and I hope you'll grant me the grace to do so. Franklin Baptist Church, like the city, has a marvelous heritage. You have done such incredible things. Some of you have been very active in the past, and somehow, missionally, and with your attendance, and with your stewardship, with your volunteering, could still be active today if you're being honest. But maybe you know you haven't been so connected lately, some of you. Yet you do want us to have a bright future. What you've done in the past, what you've accomplished together, won't do a thing today and tomorrow. You're going to have to pick a story. Like in most churches, I mentioned recently the 80-20 rule is alive and well. And about 80% of the people seem to sit back and watch about 20% of the people do a lot of the work that happens here. Not all of it, but a lot of it. You're going to want us to have a bright future and to be engaged in exciting ministry. So get ready. The plan is coming. And because we won't do anything that is remotely God-sized without more of us inching closer back and getting more deeply involved. You're going to have to pick a story. Some of us have sat in grief these last years. You've been through a lot of transition as a church and as a city. You've suffered hardship, but here we are. It's not like it used to be in so many ways here in Franklin. But if we had healthy perspective, though, and sometimes I would add it requires the healthy perspective of a newcomer who hasn't grieved through some of the things you've grieved through. If we have healthy perspective, we'd have to admit that things are still pretty good here in our city. And so in your grief and in your dismay at what you've lost in the city, some of you have taken your hands off the wheel here. And I'm going to need you to put your hands back on if we're going to move forward. Some of you wish for us to be as involved locally and otherwise in mission and ministry as we have been in past days. But sometimes when we give you opportunities to serve, some of you don't. And when we call you to mobilize and actually do helpful things, some of you don't. And for integrity's sake, you're going to have to pick a story. Some of you long for the old days when there were more young people here, more middle-aged people here, more new people here. But you also have your seat. You have your pew, your parking place, your table you like to eat at on Wednesday night. If we might need a new room for a new group, but they're needing your Sunday school room, will you be flexible enough and honest enough to know that you could make the move if we need you to? If someone is next to your room and they're noisy and all you want to do is complain, is that going to help the new group to be encouraged? If you fuss at someone new's kids who are running in the hallway, they're going to be gone. If you ask somebody to move from your seat, they'll move out the door. They're gone. Our comfort may have to be one of the things we make some adjustments in if we truly are successful in bringing in the new people you say you want here so that we can have more people here at Franklin Baptist Church. Got to pick a story. I also hear people say that they wish we had more people here. And you've heard me talk about this one almost since the day I arrived. You say you want more people here. You say you want new people here. You say you want some folks to come back here. Yet many of you haven't invited anyone to come here with you in years. You're having a good time. You stop me and tell me that you're encouraged, that you're enjoying. But you know you haven't invited someone to come to church with you in years. You haven't shared with them the good news of what we do at Franklin Baptist Church. But you say you want more people here and you got to pick a story. You may personally have one idea that you think should be the centerpiece for the vision plan that'll come soon. But someone's idea inevitably will not turn out to be one of the strategies, and that's going to be frustrating, and I get it. Will you take your toys and leave? Or will you be on board and committed? Your leadership and God's movement will need faithfulness and commitment. So at some point, as a member of the family, as a member of the tribe, you'll have to pick a story. You are such a generous church. We have tremendous resources. Last year, we slightly exceeded the projected giving goal that we had budgeted for. But we are all asked to give regularly and faithfully. If we are going to budget as we could, we need to pick it up because future generations need you and me to be giving now. The endowment can't be our answer for everything. And if we're being honest in a family conversation, your giving should have nothing to do with the endowment at all. But some are giving commensurate with their ability, and others of you might wonder if you are or not. God's going to need all the faithfulness we can muster and invest in this place and in the community around us. Some of you want us to do marvelous things, but are you going to have to pick a story financially? Like I said, I don't want to be accused of or congratulated for stepping on anyone's toes. I just stepped on every one of our toes just now. But I hope you'll feel motivated also, because lighting God's path is a plan that I hope we're going to end up adopting as a church a few weeks from now. We're going to need to be operating at our very best when that time comes. Your leadership team is busy trying to anticipate faithfully where God is headed in the days to come vis-a-vis our city and our church. They are using the best vision they can muster, and our job will be to skate there as fast as we can once the vision is laid down. My deepest prayer is that the Lighting God's Path plan will instill hope and energy in us, purpose, and it should, because you are a great and healthy people. I think you're ready. That's why I came here. And as we reintroduce ourselves to Franklin and beyond, I hope that's exactly what folks will see in you, what I see in you. A great and healthy people who have chosen a story and are ready to live into a future that illuminates God's path for the days ahead. Our custom on the first Sunday of each month is to share communion with each other. I say share very intentionally because we pass the elements around among the pews, and one of the beautiful things that I enjoy watching is that our congregation, we serve each other in the bread and in the drink. And so as you prepare your hearts, let me open the invitation for you as we figuratively come to the table together. And I can't think of a better way to cap another reflection on a new day that is about to dawn. Jesus administered this meal first that we now call the Lord's Supper, as the day to come would show him handing himself over into that arrest and trial and crucifixion and sacrifice. A new thing was coming in his followers and in the church that was to be. A new day is coming for us. And so fittingly, we focus our hearts, our souls, and our prayers as we accept the gift of communion.